Welcome back. This is the Paula Gordon Show. I'm Paula. Bill Russell is with me, and we are with Per Bach. Tell us about sand piles.
Sand piles is an example I use as a metaphoric example of what I'm talking about. I'm not really interested in sand piles. Well, maybe I am. I like sand. Okay, but they sort of give an idea of what it's all about. Sand piles consist of many, many, many parts, and each of the parts, the grain of sand, is simple, and we can understand it. We can look at it, and we can understand how it topples and how it behaves and everything. Nevertheless, we don't really understand how, when we put many sand grains together, how they behave. Think, for example, at forming a pile of sand by taking a table and starting putting a little bit of sand on the table. In the beginning, the sand, grains of sand, will be at different positions and they will not see each other, they will not interact with each other, and we can still think of them as individual grain of sand.
And they just sit there.
They just sit there. But as we go on, a pile of sand will slowly form and we will start getting little avalanches in the system where one grain of sand, when it topples, affect another grain of sand, and we have an avalanche, we have a chain reaction. And eventually, we will get a very steep pile of sand, and it cannot grow any further. In average, at least, there will be a balance between the sand that we add to the system and the sand that falls off the edges in terms of avalanches. And that's how I see our world. We are sort of sitting on this avalanche where everything happens in a avalanche kind of way and not a smooth and gradual way.
From a standard physics point of view, if you looked at that grain, the pile of sand, you've got gravity, mm-hmm. you've got, you know, what could be characterized as a coefficient of sliding friction mm-hmm. between the grains of sand.
That's a very good way of thinking about it.
You've got, you know, macro forces all working on this, and the standard assumption, and I assume this is why you've been studying sand piles, not that intrinsic interest in sand, that the standard physics model would say that we ought to be able to predict mm-hmm. at what point those avalanches will occur. And what you're saying is
saying it's very difficult to predict when they are occurring. First of all, I'll return to your little row of thoughts. Indeed, this is what we call a dissipative system, that we pump energy into the system all the time in terms of these grains of sand. And then eventually these sands will topple and the energy will disappear, will become heat, or it will fall off the system as the avalanche fall off the edges of the system. So we have to feed energy into these systems all the time. So that's why they are out of equilibrium. But let me return to the issue about predictability. If we look at it, we can certainly, if we're sitting on the pile of sand, we can predict what happens in the near future. We can sit there and analyze the dynamics of nearby grains. We can see, okay, there's an instability here, or there's a grain of sand toppling there, and that will cause the next one to topple. So we can make short-term prediction, and we can get the illusion that we understand the system, but we don't, because the avalanches in the system are not generated local. They are properties of the whole system. You have to look at it in a holistic way. You have to understand the entire system in order to understand how it affects you where you are sitting. That you cannot do by just looking around you.
Is that the self-organized part?
The self-organized part is that the system builds up itself to this state where you have avalanches of all sizes. You don't need an engineer to set up the pile of sand. You can just have God's hand.
Or a little kid on the beach.
Or the little kid of the beach put the sand on top of the pile of sand without any kind of thinking. There's mm-hmm. no engineering that has to do it. That's why we call it self-organized.
And the criticality part?
Criticality is because it's just at what we call in between chaos and order. It's at a critical point. And I can explain you that.
Please.
Quite easily.
I think you need
please.
To.
Please.
Yeah. Okay.
People hear about chaos, but
they
don't understand this.
They hear about all the
They don't understand this as a scientific notion, though.
And in some ways, it's an unfortunate word, because we think of chaos.
Actually, maybe it's not even the right word to use here, but I will use it nevertheless. Because
between
chaos and
order.
Think of it the following way. if you have a shallow pile of sand, it behaves very well. If you push it somewhere, everything will only, that will only affect things very locally. So it's in a frozen, ordered state, and not much is happening. And suppose I made a very steep pile of sand, then the sand will be running all the time and would be in a chaotic state. But this pile of sand sits right in between those two extremes. It is at the edge of chaos, some people call the critical point. In one case, things will be stable and robust and in balance. That's the ordered state. In another state, the steep state, things will be violent and change all the time. There will be flow of sand all the time without any structure or complexity. But we are sitting right in between those.
And there is as little as one grain of sand can cause a transition from one of those states
to
the other.
Well, that's not the right way of thinking about it. When you're sitting at the critical state, we think of always sitting at this critical state that produces all those avalanches. When you're sitting there, one grain of sand can call an entire avalanche. If you were in the ordered state, one grain of sand could call very little damage. If you were in the chaotic state, you didn't need even a grain of sand to get all kind of violent behavior because things would be running all the time.
So it's only at this edge
At this edge that we have anything interesting. We're sitting there. That's where the world is sitting. And that's why we have.
Is the analog to that life?
Life is sitting there too. It's not the analog, I would say, but that's all kind of evidence that life is sitting there between order and chaos.
Oh, it's the real thing. It's not an analog. It's it.
Life sits there. Okay. Why do I think that? Well, we can look at the fossil record. Look at extinctions. Darwin would like us to believe, I think, that things would evolve in a gradual way. And then there would be no mass extinctions or mass eruptions of new kind of life, if I may say so, but things would go gradually. But we know that there are mass extinctions, extinctions of all sizes throughout the biological history. And of course one could argue that's because of outside sources, that there could be meteorites, volcanic eruptions, and so on. And people have taken that for granted, that if there are mass extinctions, there must be a large cataclysmic source for those extinctions. But I don't think it's necessarily so. We know that for earthquakes and volcanic eruptions, they come anyhow all the time. We don't need some external source in order to get earthquakes or volcanic eruption. And maybe life is the same way, that we don't need any kind of external source in order to have these very large eruptions, that they are just like the avalanches in the sand pile. They're generated by the dynamics itself of biology.
Because they themselves are self-organizing?
The whole ecology you can think of as sitting at the critical state. This is something that's very controversial. We don't know if it is so, but there's all kind of empirical evidence that it could be so. And what will happen, the avalanche would be what we call a co-evolutionary avalanche, that one species will go extinct, and maybe that species served as food for some other species, and so on. So you could have...
So there's an avalanche.
As an avalanche triggering through the whole system.
I want to be clear about this. Some people would say, with respect to extinction events, that an external force like an asteroid could obviously cause an event. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of people would treat a volcanic eruption or an earthquake as essentially external to the biological system. And my understanding is that even if you remove that kind of externality, there's at least some evidence that you still get these extinction events without.
Yes.
That externality.
Yes. We do know that we get extinction right. From meteorites and volcanic eruptions and so on, because we have extinctions all the time. So maybe the large extinctions is just sort of a gradual continuation of the small extinction event that we see all the time.
When we come back, I'm going to ask you about power laws, because this is something I do not understand, and apparently I need to.
All right.
This is the Paula Gordon Show. Our guest is Per Bach. Bill Russell and I are with him in Santa Fe, New Mexico. We will all be back in just a moment. We hope you'll be with us, too.